dangling the gap, extending control, a buckle and bump, redirect your force.
Hey guys, welcome to the third episode of Jiu-Jitsu Geeks Podcast. We are very excited to have our guest today, Jason Strzok. And Jason and I have known each other for a number of years. I think we first came to the Richmond area together. And I found Jason when I was looking for a supplement to my Jiu-Jitsu training. And probably like a lot of you listening out there, I wanted to get into kettlebells, but didn't want to kill myself doing it. So I found a coach and I was lucky enough to find Jason. I took a few of his seminars, and we've kept in touch ever since then. So welcome, Jason, and tell us about yourself. Tell us about your martial art background, your training background, and what you're doing now.
Well, first of all, guys, thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on, Jason.
Yeah. I've been looking forward to this for a week or two. I think we all kind of share some interests, and so we're talking a little bit before the interview about what we're going to talk about. I think all three of us are getting more and more excited about what we're going to say. My background, I think is funny, but I think it'll help kind of frame up what I'll say later. I started martial arts training first, maybe like in 1999 or 2000, basically because I was an adult who had never been an athlete or anything, and my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, was like, "You need to do some kind of exercise," or like. Not because I was necessarily out of shape, but just because she was concerned about my longevity. Yeah. So I like Jackie Chan movies and stuff like that, and like so I wanted to learn kung fu, and I looked into it, and I got really into it really fast. I thought it was the coolest thing in the world, and I love like the artistry of it, you know, and all that sort of other stuff. And after about a year, I realized after I kept getting hurt that I wasn't in good enough shape to go do martial arts to get in shape.
Right.
And I'm sure y'all probably have met people that have made that same mistake.
Yeah. Definitely.
It takes a lot of athleticism. And so I started to try to find out more about what to do to get in better shape to train, particularly because I got it in my head that I wanted to go to China. I wanted to study Chinese martial arts, like, at the source. So I made a plan, and I started saving all my pennies up. I found a school that took foreigners, and so, like, I'd be able to go over there and train full-time in Chinese martial arts, like, 5, 6, 7 hours a day, 5, 6 days a week.
I'm going to stop you. Where did you go? Because I did the same thing when I was 26.
I went to the Northern China Shaolin Martial Arts Academy in near Siping.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I went to the Wu Wei Academy in Dali in 2003.
So I went 2003 as well.
Wow.
It's really crazy. So when I was over there, something really clicked for me, and that was I got really randomly lucky. Like, we kind of got assigned to different coaches, and the coach that I had for my group was a specialist in Sanda. So, like, and when he was at school, he would win all the Sanda competitions. And for those who don't know, it's basically, like, Sanda is the major fight sport in China. It's a lot like Muay Thai. They score throwing, like standing wrestling throws, pretty highly. So in an amateur match, one of the best ways to win is to throw a guy a couple times, or literally throw them entirely out of the ring. Throw them out of the ring, you get like big points for that. And when I was training in China, I discovered that I really didn't have the heart to punch my friends in the face over and over and over again. And so I would always, you know, I'd throw a jab, and then I would, like, kind of engage, and I would throw people. And I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but it worked. And I would get lots of points, and, you know, my coach would pat me on the back, and I wouldn't have to beat my friends in the face. So I really liked it. When I got home, I was like, well, I want to keep doing this. But I had some injuries that made it really hard to practice high kicks. And I love the throwing part of it, so, you know, I looked up judo, and I moved to D.C. shortly after I came home, and or Northern Virginia, really. In the Northern Virginia area, I was just like, you know, I had a couple of choices at a judo schools I could go to. It just randomly happened that the one that was right down the street for me was this guy named Maurice Allen, who's, I think he's a 7th-degree black belt now. He's got some credentials. He's like a master of the British Empire or whatever you call it. He's like knighted. He's Scottish wrestler of the century. He won the Sambo Worlds like 6 weeks after finding out about it. He's just like, fuck it, I'll go.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's cool. Like in 1976 or something like that. He went to the Olympics for like freestyle wrestling, I think, and then took up judo afterwards. But anyways, he's like one of these kind of like legendary cats. And so I started training there, and I didn't really know the difference. So unbeknownst to me, I was going to like a highly competitive, very sport oriented school where the white belts were just cannon fodder, you know, it was like new meat and they would just beat on you. And, I weighed probably 145 pounds at the time, 155 pounds, which is like a middle heavyweight in Chinese Kung Fu. Just like a super flyweight in judo. I took a lot of beatings, and so, like, a lot of the people that were my size were, like, teenagers, girls, what have you. And they beat me up pretty bad. So
the teenage girls?
Yeah, the teenage girls whooped my ass a lot.
Yeah.
So I definitely learned, you know, everybody talks about putting your ego at the door and stuff. And it's like, I didn't really have a choice. It was, like, after 6 months, it was, like, it was beaten into me. It's not like I'm going to go around bragging over there. But that's basically, so when I started doing judo, I realized that the strength power kind of side of things, especially when you're on your feet, you know, there, I mean, your physicality makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. And especially if somebody's a weight class or two above you, you know, they're like, you know, you just unbalance them, you know, and then you set them up to throw. Well, if motherfucker outweighs you by 50 pounds, you don't just give them a little tug on the sleeve and set them up. It's like, they don't move.
Yeah.
But on the ground, you know, you could slow things down a little bit and you could kind of control the pace a little better. And when somebody was really bigger than me and I let them pin me, it still hurt. Yeah. But, in other situations, it was really helpful to me. And since, you know, the instruction for groundwork in judo is kind of very geared towards the competitive circumstances, so it's not as technical as jiu-jitsu. And you know, honestly, people aren't as good.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't take... So, I guess the expertise level, the field was, like, shallower. So, it didn't take me as long to get as good. And so, that was my way of kind of coping. You know, I get beaten up a lot on my feet, and then I could kind of catch up on the ground.
On the ground.
And I just really enjoyed it. I enjoy both aspects of it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, I just found a little bit more immediate success on the ground. Mm-hmm. And so, I started supplementing my judo training by going to... was it Jeff Ruth's school? It was like a Lloyd Irvin affiliate.
Uh-huh.
And they would do like gi and no gi classes. And I just kind of took whatever I could when I wasn't going to judo. And I got injured a lot during that time period because I was training really hard and was getting beat up a lot.
Yeah.
And so I trained as best I could. When I moved to Richmond, I wanted to keep doing judo, but it was pretty hard outside of VCU. VCU has always had this club. And it's been, like, running for, like, 40 years or whatever. But all the schools were way far away from me, like, to actually go to, like, a judo school.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other side, I knew all these people in BJJ because, you know, I started teaching kettlebell classes and other stuff like that. And people started to seek me out for my expertise in strength and conditioning. And in return, it was like I kind of had an open invitation to go to all these BJJ schools that was impossible to resist.
Yeah.
You know, I like the people and I like the training. And so as much as I'd love to like be doing more judo, it's like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu has been handed to me on a silver platter. It's it'd be dumb not to take it, especially in Richmond, which has this kind of weird situation where it's a small, it's a small town. And it's like, there's what, 7-8 black belts.
Right.
Yeah. And like, I mean, there's so many good people here. And I mean, I know that there's politics, but it's probably a little less than like a lot of places. I mean, it just seems like,
I don't think it's as bad as,
I mean, people, everybody sees each other one way or the other. I think we're lucky that we have like U.S. Grappling as an organization is really growing in strength. And then everybody from all these different sort of organizations still helps to make it work. Like you see, like the refs and stuff, they aren't all from like one group.
Right.
And the, so people who like volunteer to run those events and things are, I think that's like that's a no man's land where everybody comes together and like, I think that's what like competition should be, you know, it's like, it should be friendly to everyone.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's worked out that way. So that's my background.
Cool. Kung Fu. Well, we brought you in here because not only do you have a martial art background, but like you said, you have a strength and conditioning background. And
I didn't even talk about that.
You didn't.
How'd you got into it?
All right. So I got a couple classes left before I finish my master's degree in exercise science. So that's all right.
Yeah.
I got my undergrad is in exercise science. I have my CSCS. So that's like certified strength and conditioning specialist. That's what the guys like in the like collegiate athletics and stuff like that. The guys who coach like, you know, NFL, NBA, stuff like that. That's usually what they have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I wanted to have because I think that these sports are sports. I think Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioners are athletes first. They're combat athletes, what have you, but they're athletes first. They need to be trained like athletes. And if I wanted to learn how to train athletes, I needed to go and get a CSCS. So I did that. Same thing with the RKC. The RKC is like kettlebell centric, but I think what's so cool about the RKC is it really doesn't matter if it was kettlebells or not. I mean, the people that are going there are high quality. Yeah. You know, it's like, honestly, like if you go to a good martial arts school, it doesn't matter if it's like karate or, you know, judo or whatever. If the people there are sparring and they're trying to learn the best ways and they're practicing hard, like, you're going to make good fighters.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't matter if it's a kettlebell or a barbell or whatever. Like, yeah. So the RKC, I it's been an honor to be in RKC. It's been an awesome part to be a part of that community. That's been great. That's definitely what, like, kind of brought Aaron and I together. And a lot of people have started to recognize it and are attracted to it. So it's been really helpful.
What is it? Let me stop you real quick. What does that stand for?
Russian Kettlebell Challenge.
Challenge.
It's okay. Just like the name of the book. And it doesn't make any sense that that's like the name of the certification.
That's what I was
just
wondering if that's what it was.
That's just what they do. So it works.
For a while, I thought it was coach. And then I thought, mm-hmm. I didn't know. Okay.
Pavel, am I saying his name right? Is he the head of that? I mean, I've always seen it.
He's essentially, like, when it comes to the RKC, is like Pavel's thing. Okay. But every bit of material and organization kind of comes out of Dragon Door Publishing, which is a company owned by
somebody
else.
Got a few of those books, yeah.
Yeah. So Dragon Door pretty much, you know, basically, you know, like, is Pavel's boss, you know, and helps him, you know, gives him the cash and helps him set up, and they do, like, the RKC certification.
I'm just curious.
I'm saying this on tape, not really knowing what the hell that, but how that actually works. But John Duquesne runs Dragon Door, and John Duquesne himself, martial arts for, like, 50 years or something like that. Dude, or not like 50 years, because I think he's like 55 years old or something like that. Dude is on the cover of his own book about, like, strength and conditioning for, like, martial arts type of thing, or Tai Chi or Qigong or whatever. Yeah. No shirt on. He's like 60 years old. He's just jacked. Yeah, he's like ripped. I think he's South African or something like that. He's got an unusual accent. He's a cool guy. And he's really passionate about marketing. Yeah. He was like, he took Pavel, who's a really, really smart coach, mm-hmm. and made sure that people knew who he was. And it worked, you know? Like, we'll probably talk about that later when we talk about BJJ and CrossFit and Reebok and, like, how you market yourself doesn't define who you are or what you do. Yeah. And it's like, sometimes, I mean, people get in the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu world, like in the CrossFit world, we want to be like, oh, you know, we're underground, we're hardcore, which means we're not going to sell ourselves, you know? We're not going to, like, be commercial, what have you. Mm-hmm. But if nobody wants to come to your BJJ school because nobody knows about it.
No longevity there.
Yeah, if you don't teach, if you can't make a living teaching, eventually you have to stop teaching.
Yeah.
And then if, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter how great your Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is. If you don't have the doors open, man, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Because eventually there's going to be no students left and it dies.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's something that I think we've seen in Richmond as, like, the art has matured and the sport has matured, that, like, a lot of the guys that we were just talking about who are, like, 30 years old like us, they're growing up and they're realizing, well, damn, I gotta be, you know, running my business like business, so
I need healthcare.
My teeth are falling out.
Yeah,
like,
what do I do?
It's like, anyways.
Well, let's jump into that. You alluded to that. Let's jump into that. I asked you before we started and we saved it for the podcast, which was a good idea. And I've seen a lot of commercials recently, some things on Facebook where Reebok is now in with CrossFit in some shape, form, capacity.
Yeah, and it's funny, like, the affiliates. So I run a gym, CrossFit Full Circle. I'm a CrossFit affiliate. Like, they're all independently owned. We all do our own thing. It's like, they give us ideas about how to run our business, you know, and they give us ideas about how to train our athletes. But we have a lot of independence. And, like, we also have only limited understanding of what's going on in HQ, too. Mm-hmm. And, like, so we really, like, as affiliates, we don't know, like, what the relationship is between Reebok and HQ that clearly. Now, they are the sponsor for the CrossFit Games. That's right. Clear. So, like, they pay money to be, like, you know, call it the Reebok CrossFit Game.
Yeah.
But they also, Reebok as a business, opened their own affiliate, too. Mm-hmm. Like, so there's, like, a Reebok CrossFit gym, like, at Reebok headquarters or whatever.
Oh, okay.
So it's like, you know, it's like their corporate gym. So it's like, if you work at Reebok and, you know, and you're like one of the ad execs or whatever, when you go down for lunch to the gym to work out, you can go down to, like, Reebok CrossFit, which from what I've seen from the pictures is a very well-funded CrossFit gym.
I bet
it's nice.
Is. I bet it is.
And I think they wanted in on the opportunity. Honestly, if I had to say, like, motive, it's like Lululemon.
Mm-hmm.
Lululemon is this big thing in CrossFit and it's like $100 yoga pants.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And they're nice and everything like that, but You know, it's a luxury item, and, you know, and
funny, you, nice yoga pants that aren't $100.
If you want to be, but if you want to make money in a recession, I think you should be, you know, in a luxury field.
Yeah.
People who will pay $100 for yoga pants, you know, they don't do that bad.
Yeah.
They don't lose their jobs, whatever. And I think Reebok was like, man, we could sell $100 yoga pants to these CrossFitter people. Like, it'd be great. And I think everybody's kind of jumped on the bandwagon. So it's not just Reebok. It's like now that there's, you know, over 1,000 gyms in America, and it's like there's so many people doing it. It's like you can sell these people shoes. Mm-hmm. You can sell them like prepackaged food items. Yeah, you can sell them coconut water. You can sell them, you know, like clothing, like lifestyle clothing, just the same way as like, you know, yay, Affliction t-shirts. You
right,
know? Like
right.
It's the same kind of thing. Like people find an opportunity to, like, cash in.
Well, there's, and I hope I don't have to explain it because I can't, so just go on my word, listeners, that there's a similarity between CrossFit and Jiu-Jitsu. There's something there that they're similar about. I think maybe maybe not the commercialism of it. I don't know. But again, I can't explain it, but there's something there. So, and there's been a lot of talk with Jiu-Jitsu becoming an Olympic sport, is that good or bad? Some of the competitors are talking about, you know, is it good or bad to get major sponsorships? I think most people think it would be good. And I think Jiu-Jitsu can learn something from CrossFit teaming up with a big company like Reebok. Has this been good or bad for CrossFit?
And really, you know what? Like when you try to assess, like the outcome of an event, you have to have measurement criteria. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, you can't say good or bad. Mm-hmm. It's like, unless you say, well, my goals are this. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, like, if my goals are to get wider exposure across the broader populace, right? So, it's like, let's say 100,000 people know what CrossFit is now, and I want to get to 1,000,000. Is Reebok good or bad for CrossFit? Reebok's good.
Very good.
Yeah, because they do a commercial on, like, a major network.
They help
get the games on ESPN.
Yeah, they open a lot of doors. Reebok's name just opens a lot of doors.
Yeah. And already, like, in the 6 months or so since they aired the last games on ESPN, I've had multiple people who, you know, have come in for, like, a trial class or something like that.
Ask you,
and they're like, yeah, I saw the games. You know, I saw the games on ESPN. And it's, you know, it's exactly the same as Jiu-Jitsu. I mean, it's like, I have friends who teach, and, you know, they understand that it's a double-edged sword, that somebody's going to walk in the door and be like, I want to train UFC.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, that's probably, if you're a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guy, it's probably not your ideal client, but it's an opportunity you never had before.
Right.
It's like, if it wasn't for Zuffa, like, you would have a harder time drumming up business. I remember being a kid, like, probably in junior high, when, like, mm-hmm. friends started trading tapes UFC 1, UFC 2. And, you know, even then, it still didn't stick in my head. I didn't understand enough. I didn't practice any martial arts. I'd never been in a real fight. Like, I didn't really get, like, I thought it was really cool watching style versus style, you know. Right. But I didn't walk away from it going, obviously, I need to learn grappling.
You know?
I was like, I just kept skateboarding, whatever it was we did, you know. Like, I didn't care. I just thought it was cool. I still watched Jackie Chan movies and thought that was martial arts, you know. Yeah. Dude, that would be such a great subject probably for another day. But you know, what Americans think martial arts is mm-hmm. a lot like what Americans think fitness is, you know? It's like, it's kind of fucked up.
Yeah, yeah.
For lack of a better word. It's like, it's not about reality. It's really just, it's about marketing presentation.
Right. Okay. Well, one thing that I definitely wanted to touch on is in bringing you in, I mean, the main question I think that we can ask you, I mean, you have a lot of information, we're going to get to a few other things, but the main thing for the takeaway, I think there are audience, I mean, if Cron Gracie and Saulo Ribeiro and John, you're listening to this, great, wonderful. I doubt it, though. it's probably...
Those guys are hungry, man.
Yeah.
Let's see what it takes.
It's probably the... and if they are, please come on and be interviewed by us.
This is the BJJ Everyman type podcast,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, exactly. So, the average dude, or girl, you know, they are going to jiu-jitsu, you know, just from my experience, going to different gyms, anywhere from 2 to, you know, once you start getting up into 5 times, it's probably a regular, you know, very consistent person. But what does that person need to be doing, the hobbyist, the recreational jiu-jitsu person, what do they need to be doing outside of jiu-jitsu to take care of themselves? Is jiu-jitsu enough? Is it enough to go to jiu-jitsu and then that's it? Or are there other things that they can do and should do?
I think first it's just really helpful that you kind of clarify, like, there's a difference between Kron Gracie and your, you know, 30-year-old Bluebell who comes three nights a week.
Yeah.
You have to really, again, like we were saying before, like, you have to have clear goals and assessment criteria before you say, is this good, is this bad?
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people that are training jiu-jitsu recreationally, they probably have a limited athletic background. You know what I mean? It's probably something that you discover as an adult for one reason or another, and you come into it a little out of shape. You know, maybe your relative strength to body weight isn't that hot. Maybe your flexibility and mobility isn't great. And the truth is honestly just doing the training at first will make a huge impact on your overall health, right?
Sure.
I think all of us have seen people in the gym that were, like, really out of shape, you know? Yeah. And it's sometimes it's kind of fun to, like, you know, watch them roll for, like, 3 minutes and just, you know, like, want to go throw up.
Yeah.
But over time, that person, after 6 months, is going to get a lot more acclimated to that level of, like, work capacity, and they're going to get in better shape. But at some point, it doesn't matter what sport it is, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu has to kind of follow this rule, too. Just practicing the sport is not enough. In fact, just practicing the sport is probably going to lead to, like, overuse or, you know, repetitive or overtraining injuries. If you repeat the same movements in the same way over and over and over again, it is going to make you stronger, that movement, but it's going to come at a cost. And I think that's something that, you know, if you don't take a little time to dig in and learn a little bit more about training, you know, if you're just like, hey, what do I do? Push-ups, pull-ups? Like, you maybe don't realize, like, I mean, the main training goal is to enhance performance first and foremost. Right? And I think the most attractive thing when you say enhance performance is to be like, okay, well, this is what I do to perform. How do I go harder and faster in this thing?
Yeah.
You know, and it's a really logical sort of idea. If I'm a boxer and I want to get better at punching, wouldn't it be great if I held a weight in my hands and, like, punched somebody, you know, like, or like, you know, I practice that way. So then I would be stronger when I punched. And that, it's completely obvious why somebody would want to think that. But the truth is you're already punching, right? If you're a boxer, you're already punching 1,000 times a day. You don't need, like, more volume of punching. What you need is, like, shoulder health, you know? You need to give yourself the capacity to withstand 1,000 punches a day. Now, when we talk about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it starts to get more complicated, right?
Yeah.
The domain of Jiu-Jitsu incorporates, like, different planes, you know, different parts of the body, different directions of movement in a way that almost no other sport does. I think most of your listeners here, no matter how recreational they are, they're fascinated by Jiu-Jitsu because it is probably the most complex and most cognitively engaging sport out there, right?
Right, right.
There are so many variables. And that's what I like about judo, too. I feel actually like I think judo is a great idea for a sport. You know, the execution of it today has its weaknesses, but the fact that, you know, there's such a strong emphasis on stand-up and, like, throwing and, you know, clinching, grappling, like, takedown techniques as well as ground techniques makes it a really difficult sport in the sense that, you know, you can have so many strategies for success. If I'm a 400-meter sprinter, there's really only one strategy for success. I got to run really fucking fast.
For 400 meters.
Yeah. Like, the old joke in track and field is, you know, you run hard and you lean left.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much all you got to do.
Yeah.
Jiu-jitsu, man, you don't know if the guy coming at you is going to shoot for a single or if he's going to take a high, like, collar grip and try to sasai you. And once you go down, you don't know what their game is going to be like, and you don't know what type of submissions are coming. You don't know if somebody's going to, you know, be comfortable on the bottom or they're going to be, like, a real pressure type player. It's like there's so many different things going on. And so, you know, I think it's senseless to try to think of training for jiu-jitsu in terms of, well, I need to make my arm bar stronger. You know, I'm going to practice like cranking an arm hard, you know, against the weight. Like, it doesn't make sense anymore. So you can do strength training in the sense of, you know, being stronger. And I think that's important. I think strength in and of itself is injury preventive, right? So all things being equal, if two guys, you know, who weigh 150 pounds, one squats 150 and one squats 250. The guy who squats 250, you know, it's going to be harder to, like, mangle him around in some way he's not supposed to be so that something twists, cracks, pops, or whatever. And they're going to have probably more just meat on their bones as far as, like, it is a contact sport, right? A little bit of hypertrophy is really helpful, right? I went through a period of trying to make weight in judo for the 66 kilo weight class, and at 5'10", that made me a skinny, skinny guy. Wow. And it's like getting thrown over and over and over again when your bony starts to get real old, real fast. Yeah. Getting thrown and having somebody falling on your ribs when you're really skinny, really bony, gets really old really fast. And so all things being equal, a stronger guy is just going to be harder to hurt, you know? And I've had this argument so many times with friends who, you know, are brown belts, black belts, and they're teaching and they're running their schools. And I want to work with them to help them like improve, you know, maybe I'm coming to do a workshop. Maybe I try to advise them on how they do warmups. And I think the first reaction is like, jiu-jitsu is about technique. So my students don't need to be stronger. Mm-hmm. That's not going to help them perform better. And it's not going to help them learn jiu-jitsu. And what I have to get people to understand is I don't think that, like you, I don't think that you're ever going to bench press your way out of the mount. What I think is that if you're stronger, like pushing and pulling, like your shoulders are going to be healthier. And, you know, and so you're going to be able to know your limits when it comes to when somebody's like, twisting you up in a Kimura, like, how far is it really going to go? You know, what's uncomfortable versus injurious? Like, you kind of have a better sense of that. As well as, you've got more resilience in the tissues as well. Like, you're going to be able to make the occasional mistake where, you know, something goes a little too far, and you're not going to be broken. Mm-hmm. Or if you are broken, you're going to recover a lot more quickly. And then finally, like, the conditioning side of it, you know, if you have the work capacity, mm-hmm. all things being equal, something as cognitively demanding as Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is a mental sport, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And the only way to learn the skills is to come out and practice.
Right.
Over and over and over again. And if you don't have the work capacity to come out and practice decently hard and, like, take it serious and actually try, mm-hmm. and then come back tomorrow and do it again, like, if you can't because you're too banged up, well, shit, you're not going to get as much practice as the next guy.
That's right.
Again, all things being equal, we take these two dudes, and they're the same, and one comes twice a week and one comes three times a week. 50 weeks out of the year, he's already 50% ahead on practice time. 5 years down the road, that guy's a brown belt, and the other guy's like, you know, a 2-3-stripe blue belt, you know?
Got it. That's
and,
good.
And it, that's the thing that people don't get. It's like, I don't think you're going to, you know, power clean or bench press your way to a competitive victory. And even if I kind of acknowledge that you can do that at a certain like competitive level, I still don't think that that's the key to long-term progress. That's not what I want for people who do a sport like this. What I want for people who do a sport like this is the ability to practice pretty hard, have a good time, make the most of their training, and then come back the next day and do it again. And the truth is if you don't have some athletic preparation, if you don't have a wide base of general physical preparedness, you cannot train hard on a consistent basis. You will get hurt. You'll get overtrained when you try to train hard, or you'll just always constantly undertrain because you're incapable of training hard.
Yeah.
You know, and it, I mean, let's face it. If you take up the sport when you're 20, you got a limited shot clock as far as being like, as being athletic. And that's what almost everybody does. You know, they're like, I'm some normal dude. And I saw this and I thought it was so cool. And then I tried it and I was like, holy shit, this is the greatest. Right. And now I'm 25 and it's like, I want to get my purple belt or my brown belt before I'm 35 and, you know, before I'm like, you know, all old and broken or whatever. Yeah. It's like, well, how am I going to get X amount of practice in per week? Mm-hmm. And, you just have to be in decent shape.
Yeah.
And it's tough because, you know, the mat itself will give you some of that conditioning, right? There's a lot of energy system demands in rolling, mm-hmm. you know? So if you roll modestly hard, you know, you go 60, 70, 80%, you know, three nights a week, you're going to get a lot of cardio out of it. And that's another mistake that kind of kills me when I do watch people who want to train. They want to replicate the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in the gym. And it's like, it's the same thing as the boxing analogy earlier. It's like, you get energy system development from rolling. Why do you just constantly want to do like these low intensity circuits? It's like, you already do that. You already got that. You need to do basic strength training.
You start to look at some of the strength and conditioning for Jiu-Jitsu. When they're related, do a Google search of the two, and you're going to come up with certain things. And I don't want to say any names of them, but there are some out there that mimic certain movements,
mm-hmm.
and that's the way a lot of the guys are. Does that speak to that? These low intensity, not even body weight circuits. It's really, you know, movement drills.
I think it's particularly so Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is still a little more specific. So if you look at Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, you're going to get some good hits. Like we were talking about Steve Maxwell.
Yeah.
Right? So you might get some stuff from him, and it's probably pretty smart stuff, you know? my friend Jason C. Brown has made his business out of kind of, you know, selling himself as a strength and conditioning expert for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And he's got, you know, like there's been interviews like this one that he's done where he said like exactly what I'm saying now. It's like basic strength training is probably what you're missing. You know, most people who, again, you know, they start Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu as an adult, they probably also start serious strength and conditioning training as an adult, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, if, you know, if you haven't had, like a high school or collegiate sort of training environment, and you don't know good technique in bench press, back squat, power clean, like, you're going to go read the Muscle magazine and you're going to do a bodybuilding workout, and it's not going to really help you in your Jiu-Jitsu. And I think that's the stereotype that has negatively impacted strength and conditioning for 20 or 30 years. Mm-hmm. People basically see their alternatives as, you know, bodybuilding or jogging, and neither of which really yields very good results on the mat. Mm-hmm. So they're like, well, obviously I don't need to do it. I probably just need to spend more time on the mat.
Right.
Worst part being, more time on the mat always helps the mat. Yeah. So it's like, it's not, I love strength and conditioning, but it can't come before mat time.
Right.
And it's got to supplement and support mat time. And I think what most guys, when they're training in this situation, like they're 25 to 30 years old, you know, and they're training 3 days a week, I think what most guys are missing, never had any coaching on the big lifts. Mm-hmm. So they don't know how to back squat or front squat safely. They don't know how to do like maybe a power clean or a power snatch.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know, you know, some of those really core components. If you talk to a collegiate level or professional level, like strength and conditioning guy, 75 to 95% of them are going to agree that things that I just said should be the backbone of your program.
Right.
And it's pretty intimidating for somebody who doesn't know what they're doing to go and do them. And worse still, I mean, if you're not intimidated, but you still know what you're doing, you're probably going to get hurt.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
It has to be done right. And it's one of those things that I think people generally perceive strength and conditioning as not nearly as complicated as Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Right. Mm-hmm. So if I want to go out and pursue Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I recognize immediately that going onto YouTube and watching videos is not how I learn Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, right? And if we instantly recognize the humor in that, we'll make fun of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the same guys that acknowledge that will be like, well, you know what? I heard power cleans are good for athletes. They'll go onto YouTube and watch a video of a power clean and start slinging a barbell around. And I don't mean to say that doing a power clean is as complex as like a judo or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu skill, because it's not.
Right.
But I wouldn't want to do anything that's kind of high intensity technical and becomes a big part of my training, like not under professional supervision, you know, like I would want to learn how to do it right. Maybe just even once or twice, like the workshop that, you know, you attended, you know, that was maybe 6 or 12 lessons or something like that. That makes a world of difference versus one lesson and infinitely versus zero lessons, right?
Well, every time I do a swing, I'm still thinking about you telling me, you know, to get my hips back and all that. You know, it's still in my head of how to do it from, what, 5 years ago, just in your seminars.
And it comes back to, like, assessment criteria. Yeah. You know, if you don't have clear goals and then you don't really know how to measure, then you can't really say, am I being successful or not? Mm-hmm. And so you kind of go into the gym and you spin your wheels.
Yeah.
Not really knowing what you're doing. I will segue over to the mobility side of things. Strength and conditioning, to me, incorporates mobility. And I think everybody in jiu-jitsu is like, mobility is a good thing. It's funny because to me it's a physical attribute no different than cardiovascular endurance or muscular strength. But if you go to most Brazilian jiu-jitsu teachers, they will tell you cardiovascular endurance is helpful, muscular strength is not. You know, it's like you can't strength your way through jiu-jitsu. It's like, it's, you know, that'll give you bad technique. It's like, it's a false sense of success to, like, manhandle somebody just because you're bigger and stronger than them. Yet, like, flexibility is never bad, you know? Yeah. It's like, they're, to me, they're both physical attributes. It's like, if I'm, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a really famous, like, really flexible person, but I'm Eddie Bravo, you know? It's it's like, I think you can, there's a definite argument that Eddie Bravo's style of jiu-jitsu is, in a way, stunted because of his physical capacity to do things that other people, like, with a more traditional approach to jiu-jitsu would be like, you know, like, you don't lay on the bottom, you know? It's like, just because you can, like, twist your, like, you know, lower leg behind their ear doesn't mean that it's okay to, like, get crushed on the bottom.
Right.
I think everybody's been talking about the Marcelo Garcia video lately.
Like, yeah.
And that's the one thing that everybody says. They're like, man, Eddie Bravo, like, he's just gasping for air. And it's like, doesn't he look? He looks really exhausted. Marcelo Garcia like
looks fresh.
Yeah, and he keeps every time that Marcelo passes him, mm-hmm. he just disengages and starts all over again. And like lets him pull half guard. He's like, half guard's your game. I'm just gonna let you do it over and over and over again. And I think what you know, all the people that I know that are like brown belts and stuff like that above, they were like, you know, what I took away from that is it doesn't matter how good you are on the bottom. If you spend an hour on the bottom, you're gonna be exhausted.
Yeah,
you know, and it's like. That's not well-rounded jiu-jitsu. Just because I'm flexible enough to do certain things and tie people up mm-hmm. doesn't stop them from laying on my face, you know?
Right.
Just because I'm strong enough to bench press my way out of the mount doesn't mean that that's good jiu-jitsu, right?
Right, right.
And just because I have enough cardio to lose 100 times and never get tired, is that good jiu-jitsu?
No.
Yeah. So the whole joint mobility thing is just, I think it mostly comes back to health, and I think it needs to be balanced with strength. Everybody's seen like the yoga Gumby type.
Yeah.
It's like they can put their leg behind their ear, but it's kind of dangerous because there's no strength to really go along with it.
Well, people have that idea that you can't get strong and be flexible at the same time. You have to give up one or the other. And I think jiu-jitsu shows that you can, or yoga shows you can have both, but the idea.
Good weight training does. Olympic weightlifters show that you can be the strongest person in the entire world and also be one of the more flexible people.
But there's always that myth, the more strong you get, that you just can't move. I don't get it. You know?
I would encourage all your listeners to take a break from the podcast, go to YouTube and look up Hossein Rezazadeh. Literally, in one sense of the word, the strongest man in the world.
Who's that again?
Super heavyweight Hossein Rezazadeh. All right, so he still owns the world's clean and jerk record. He recently got his snatch surpassed by his Iranian training partner. I can't remember his name. But anyways, this guy, oh God, what is it, 265 kilos clean and jerks? Clean and jerks, 265 kilos, right? At a body weight of like probably a little over 330 or 350 pounds. Huge dude. And he is so fast and he is so flexible. And he is like, as Kelly Starrett would say, he's like a puma. Panther. He gets under that bar so fast, like it's slick, and he has this rock bottom front squat and his elbows are flying up, you know, and everything, his technique is gorgeous. I don't care how strong, you know, he really really is, he is like the strongest man in the world, like, but he wouldn't be on, you know, he wouldn't be taking a gold medal from the Olympics if he wasn't also the fastest and most flexible. And flexibility is highly specific. Flexibility, you train flexibility. Whatever way you train it, that's how you got it, right? So if you train to touch your toes, like in a slow static stretch, your hamstrings will be awesome in a slow static stretch. That doesn't mean that your spine or your neck is any more flexible, right? It's highly specific. Just like strength training is the same way. If you train for strength in the legs, your arms will remain weak, right? And if you train for power, then you may get faster, but you know, you may not necessarily be all that much stronger. And if you train for muscular endurance, you know, you may be able to do more work, but you may not necessarily have the same, you know, increase your force capacity. You know, so it's all very specific. And that's why I think you kind of have to have very specific criteria when you go in there. You got to know what you want. And I think what the average recreational guy needs is to be able to move over a big range of motion with good control, have really good midline stabilization, right? Good, like, core strength and, you know, postural structure, like, and then have the work capacity to enjoy an hour, hour and a half of Brazilian jiu-jitsu and then wake up the next morning and still walk, you know?
Right.
And good strength training incorporates range of motion in such a way that you don't need to do a lot of extra mobility exercises, right? You warm up and you get nice and hot and loose, and then you do weightlifting that incorporates a large range of motion, and it's a lot of bang for the buck. Whether it's squatting or movements like the Romanian deadlift or, like, dude, doing an overhead squat. You go out there and you try to put, like, 100-plus pounds on the bar and do an overhead squat, all right? You must be flexible in order to be successful. And it's, like, it's a lot of bang for the buck for somebody who wants to be, like, a judo or jiu-jitsu player, right? In an overhead squat, you have to have a lot of shoulder mobility. You have to have a lot of shoulder stability. You have to have awesome hip mobility. You have to have great balance. You have great core strength. And you got to be able to have your upper body and lower body do two different things at the same time. When I first got really serious about the overhead squat, it dramatically improved my foot sweeping game. Mm-hmm. Like, I finally understood, you know, it took strength training for me to get technique. You know, yeah. I had to get better. I had to spend time in the trenches on the overhead squat to understand how I would foot sweep somebody from the hip down, which is something that they say, like, in judo, you know, it's like your whole leg, like, you know, brushes that target away, and it's like, I didn't really get it until, you know, I was, like, trying and failing in the overhead squat, and then trying and succeeding in the overhead squat, and just spending a lot of time in the trenches.
Is the overhead squat the same or just as beneficial with a barbell as it is with kettlebells? Is there a difference to that?
I think everything changes a little bit when you change the implements. You know, it's like saying, is jiu-jitsu the same in a gi or, like, no gi?
Mm-hmm.
Well, at the heart and soul of it, yeah, most of side control is the same, right?
Right.
But there's definitely going to be some differences. Like, right. If you can't grab the pants or, like, you know, how you do little things is going to change. So, like, if you hold a barbell,
mm-hmm.
you're probably taking a big wide snatch grip, and your arms are moving together in a certain way. They're tied together by that bar.
Right.
Most of the time you're using a kettlebell, you're probably talking about one kettlebell.
Yeah.
You know, and so you have to balance it. You can't, your arm can't be out, like, in a Y. You know, it's mm-hmm. got to be overhead so that the bell will stay where it needs to be. And it's really hard to jack your bicep up in your ear and get that kettlebell over your shoulder blades while you're doing an overhead squat. So it feels like a different movement.
Mm-hmm.
And your upper body is going to have to do a little bit of a different work. But at the end of the day, there's a lot more similarity between a kettlebell and barbell overhead squat than, mm-hmm. say, like, a barbell overhead squat and a push-up.
Gotcha.
You know?
Okay. You're talking a lot about, and you're alluding to a lot of the big lifts being beneficial to a jiu-jitsu player. It makes total sense. And another thing, if you look at some of the strength and conditioning out there as it relates to jiu-jitsu guys, you'll stumble upon a lot of body weight stuff. Mm-hmm. Can a guy get it done? Can a jiu-jitsu guy get the strength that he needs to enjoy jiu-jitsu, stay on that, get all the benefits you talked about? Can he or she get that from body weight?
Good question.
I think you have to be really creative to make the intensity that simply your body weight provides always appropriate for your training goals.
Mm-hmm.
Helps, right? If you're in prison, probably.
Well, like, if you have that kind of time, then you can come up with, like, variations. But if you look at gymnastics is principally body weight training.
Yeah.
Right? And how that they progressively overload the system is, as you learn more and more complicated movements, you purposely, like, destroy your own leverage. Right? You do things the hard way to impress people. That's, like, what gymnastics is, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, if you are at a certain level of strength, you know, the push-up can actually be challenging in a certain way that, like, it's actually giving you good pressing strength.
Mm-hmm.
But after a short while, you know, you're going to be able to do 20 or 30 push-ups, and then it's no longer strength training anymore, really. It's, like, muscular endurance training, right? Exactly. So then what do? You make the push-up harder, right? You can throw on a weight vest, but it won't be long before, if you weigh 170 pounds and then you weigh 190 pounds, it's not a huge intensity change, right? So then what do? You go to the one-arm push-up? Well, shit, going from 190, like, all this, like, on two hands, and then to one hand is a doubling of intensity, right? That's probably too fast a jump, and it might be really hard at first. So you can play with the leverage, and you can make it more challenging. You can get different surfaces. You know, you can change the angle of your body. And if you're creative, you can come up with some stuff. But it's like reinventing the wheel. It's like, man, come on. Barbells are easy. Like, I hate, you know, your average, like, Globo gym can be, like, a giant waste of time. But if you're serious and you know what you're doing and you can pay, like, $40 or $50 a month to go, you know, use somebody's weights, like, it's not a bad deal. I mean, like, what I do is different. I mean, I coach people, and so they aren't paying me for my weights. They're paying me to, like, create a program for them, make sure they do everything correctly, and then, like, to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two different things, but, like, you know, I think people want to think that, like, oh, I'm a Brazilian jiu-jitsu player, so, like, I need sport specificity, right? So instead of doing things with a barbell, I'm going to wrap a gi around the bar, you know, or, like, I think of Steve Maxwell. I love Steve Maxwell. But every photo of every exercise, right, he's like, I just took my jacket off, you know, and he's, like, wearing gi pants, and he's, like, on the mats.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't need to be on the mats in gi pants, like, to do a body weight squat and show jiu-jitsu guys how to squat. Everybody needs the same basic movements. If you're an athlete, right, you need the same basic movements. And I think when you get to that whole CRON thing that we were talking about, I think then you can start looking at how your strength and conditioning training can supplement your specific game, right? And your strength and conditioning coach is going to work with your sport coach to figure out what you need You know, and they're going to put you up there. But what we're talking about is a recreational guy. Probably, honestly, could just be in better general shape, you know. And more importantly than anything else, have the mobility and the strength to get through practice without getting hurt and the work capacity to recover for the next practice. And I think a lot of that can happen through a combination of really basic barbell lifts and then, you know, decent nutrition, you know, and managing stress in your life, managing your overall training load, and having that work capacity, that energy system development that happens through rolling.
Yeah.
I think the whole process of getting more fit for jiu-jitsu can be very organic at first, you know, and it's like you can't handle more than a couple rounds of training because, one, you're wasting a lot of energy, and, two, you know, you're just deconditioned. But, you know, you keep coming to class, and you start wasting a little less energy and becoming a little more efficient, and you start to build up a little bit of a gas tank, and then you get to that place after 6 months or a year, it's like, then you're like, you know, you can get through your 30 minutes or your hour of rolling, and you still got energy left. And it's like, then it's time to look at, well, you know, how does my bench press compare to, like, normative data, you know, or my back squat or my deadlift? And I think that, again, I think a lot of recreational jiu-jitsu guys, they want to mimic jiu-jitsu in the gym. And I just don't think it's as productive a line of training as maybe just bringing up their general athleticism. And more specifically, I mean, you got to remember, like, if I'm talking about a high school or college athlete, I guarantee you they have a higher vertical jump than you do.
Right.
I guarantee you that they're probably better at squatting and benching than you are, you know, and those real basic things tell us a lot about, you know, your capacity for movement. I think the best thing that you can have is like a pretty decent level of relative strength. I mean, we gotta acknowledge the fact that Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is a weight class sport.
Yes.
So relative strength is probably more important than absolute strength.
Relative to their body weight?
Exactly.
Is that what you mean by that?
Yeah, okay. So all things being equal, we were talking earlier, a 150-pound guy who back squats 150 and one who back squats 250, we can tell you a lot about what that guy, those two different guys are going to perform. Like if we put them up and we have them do a 100-meter sprint, the guy that back squats 250 is going to finish like substantially faster, you know? If we put him up on the vertical jump, the guy who squats 250 is going to jump substantially higher. And more important than anything else, like endurance is typically going to come down to being like some sub-maximal percentage. Yeah. You know, so like let's say my max vertical jump is 30 inches. Mm-hmm. If you make me jump 20 inches, like 100 times as fast as I can, or like 100 times in a night's workout, that's only like a 66% effort. I can do that a bunch.
Yeah.
You know, but if my max vertical is 21 and I need to jump 20 100 times, that is going to completely wreck my ass. I'm going to be completely done.
Oh, I see.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's going to be a 95% effort over and over and over again. That's going to kill me. And it's like, that's what you see. Again, I think we were talking before, like, Jason C. Brown had a great post about how, you know, there's recreational players who just have no consistency. And I think we all know this guy who shows up, like, on Monday, and he's like, I know I kind of missed class last week, but, man, I'm going to get after it this week, right? And they kill themselves for, like, an hour, hour and a half, and then you don't see them again until, like, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, because they're destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, they're 30 years old, and they're out of shape, and they went too hard, too fast, and then they can't barely get out of bed the next morning, and they avoid coming, you know, Wednesday night, like, their schedule, and they're finally ready again on Friday.
Yeah.
And by that time, you know, they miss the interseeding lesson between Monday and Friday. They don't know what's going on in the class. They're always playing catch up. And they're not accumulating, honestly, what I think we all agree is the cognitive lessons, right?
Yeah.
You've got to have that time in the trenches of, like, trying plan A, it's not working, go to plan B, and, like, finding out how people, you know, react and all this other stuff. It's like, no, there's no replacement for mat time.
Right.
And if your strength and conditioning takes away mat time, then it's a bad thing. If your lack of strength and conditioning doesn't allow you to add more mat time, it's a bad thing.
Good
right?
Point.
So it's a double-edged sword. And, you know, I've definitely been in the habit of spending more time in my strength and conditioning than on the mat. And that's because strength and conditioning is my job. So if I let that slide, I'm not as good of a role model, right? And people are going to interpret my validity as an instructor based on some of my personal capacity, right? As wrong as that may be.
Right,
like,
sure.
Like, I think we all probably know BJJ people who can whip your ass, right? But they may not be the best teacher in the world,
right?
But it doesn't matter. It's like, you have to have some credentials, some criteria, you know? You have to have a black belt, you know? You have to win fights in order to be, like, a fighting teacher.
Yeah.
And so it's the same with me. It's like I have to keep like my barbell lifts up to a certain like level, and plus I really enjoy it.
Right.
And we were talking about scheduling before. I mean, it's like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is gonna be hard if it's like it can only happen at this time because it's a social thing too, right? Yeah, it requires a group. It requires like you know group participation. You can't train Jiu-Jitsu on your own. So strength and conditioning has to be secondary. It has to come at some time that's non-jiu-jitsu time.
Well, that's a good point, a question I wanted to ask. And I think you may have touched on it with submaximal, you know, training 60% versus 90% allows you to recover, get on the mat, you've done some work. But the question is, how does the guy, he's on the mat 4 or 5, whatever, he's on the mat quite a bit for a recreational guy. How does he fit the strength and conditioning in and not wear himself out so he can still come on the mat, you know, Monday, Wednesday?
I would say, I hate to say this, guys, like sales pitch, but like that's when like you start to have, you're trying to juggle a lot of demanding things.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt to have some professional intervention.
Yeah.
And the best thing in the world that can happen for an athlete is when the people that are helping him are working together. Like if you can get a team behind you, that's excellent. And I've had that experience once or twice where Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu instructors brought me their students, and they were like, this is when he's competing. This is how much he's training right now. Don't let him hurt himself. Like, he needs this. Do this. But rarely is that the case. If you're Johnny Recreational, you're either, like, teaching yourself strength and conditioning, right, or you're going to a more generic setting.
Yeah.
I think it's really common for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioners to seek out CrossFit gyms, and I will definitely not say that's a mistake because I don't want to hurt my own business. But, like, CrossFit and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu are very, like, competitive with one another as far as, like, energy system demands.
Yeah.
And I already said it. I think that strength work should come first before energy system development for a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu practitioner because, honestly, more time on the mat is going to be energy system development, right? And if you go to a CrossFit gym, a lot of times you're going to have these workouts that might be a lot of body weight stuff, might be lower intensity, might be very high repetition. Mm-hmm. And it's like you're going to go for 20 or 30 minutes just, like, as fast as you can. And it's maybe not the quality movement that you need. Maybe it's not productive as far as, like, force and power. And it's just you running around, you know, running yourself ragged and get tired, you know? And it's like, you don't need to be more tired, you know? Like, if you want things to go out to happen really well for your specific demands, you need to have somebody specifically helping you.
Right.
It's sad. Like, people make this argument all the time that, like, you know, CrossFit isn't the best thing for, like, a BJJ guy or an MMA fighter. Because it's not specific to BJJ or MMA. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a pretty dumb argument. Because it's like, of course it's not. Like, it would always be better to have a personal trainer or a coach, like, telling you exactly what you need to do for you.
Yeah.
That's like saying that going to BJJ class is a waste of time. Because you should really only train privately with your instructor. That'd be fucking phenomenal.
Right.
I'd love to do that. Right?
Practical, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but who's going to put up, like, $300 a week to do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, right?
Right.
And you're... Most people complain about the 150 or something that most guys are asking.
Yeah.
Especially in Richmond.
Yeah.
People are cheap as hell in Richmond. Sorry, Richmond.
Yeah.
Yeah. People are cheap as hell.
But I mean, speaking of that, and the point being that, you know, it's great if you can go out, find a coach. And the average jiu-jitsu guy knows what he or she's doing. So they can go to a good strength and conditioning coach and say, hey, here's what I'm doing. You know, what can I do to supplement my training?
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the route they should, I would suggest, you know, that they do. So you know what you're doing. And it doesn't, can't they do it for a set amount of time, get some advice from the guy, if it's not anything they can do week in and week out, and, you know, maybe find a good seminar.
I think it's like, I think what we're hitting on is like this sort of continuum of sort of like quality, versus like resource scarcity here, where at the lowest rung of like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu training is you have Buffalo Wild Wings, you know, watching UFC fights, right? That's how you learn how to fight.
Yeah.
Your next step up is like intensive research on YouTube, you know? Then after that, you pay $100 a month to go to BJJ.
Yeah.
And then after that, you pay $100 an hour to be taught by a black belt, right? That's the continuum. And there is exactly the same continuum in any field, right?
Yeah.
So in strength and conditioning, I mean, you could basically occasionally get into an arm wrestling match when you're drunk at a bar, right? It's like, you can say, my arms are really strong, man. Or, you know, you can go to AmFam or Gold's or whatever and watch what the idiot next to you is doing and then mimic it, which is apparently what 80% of Americans do at a Globo gym. And then the next step is you can start going to group classes, man. They could be yoga lattes, they could be Zumba. they could be CrossFit. And then above and beyond that, you can start going to like a coach and training with them one-on-one. And I think what's so intimidating about that, and I think the same can be true of like martial arts, is it's difficult to know when you have a qualified instructor. You know, it's like, and I think that's what's so strong about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and any sort of non-cooperative combative martial arts, right? So if I go looking for boxing or judo or Muay Thai or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu instruction, what I'm often going to find is an instructor who can beat everybody else in the room, right? Mm-hmm. That's important. They need to be able to do that. And then if I can find somebody who can do that and communicate to me, then I'm fairly confident I got what I need, you know? And it's like, that's, I think we all know, like, that's why we love Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, because it works, you know? And that's why it's so hard, because it works. So it's like, you show up for practice, you know, a year after the guy next to you, that guy's going to keep beating you, you know, forever. Yeah. You know, it's like, if y'all are both training, I mean, it's frustrating. You know, you take a lot of beatings as like a beginner.
Well, something you said, Jason, there's got to be a level above going to a professional for advice. You know, when you talk about the levels of how you want to take it, because I remember I went to a gym that's pretty big here in Richmond, and this was a few years back, and I was talking to the trainer who, you know, is much bigger than you. I mean, he was just a jacked guy. And I was like, look, I do jiu-jitsu. His understanding of jiu-jitsu was like my understanding of neuroscience, not there. And I said, I need to get stronger before I do some jiu-jitsu. And he's like, well, I remember him telling me, well, you probably want to start bench pressing. Mm-hmm. And he just gave me bodybuilding exercises that I did for about 6 months. But had I got, you know, seeked out somebody like you who knows jiu-jitsu and he knows strength and conditioning. So you've got to be the level, like, above just the average trainer.
Like, it's honestly, more than anything else, it's just, like, a lucky fit, too, right?
Right.
So, here I am. I'm a strength coach first, but the reason I'm a strength coach is because of, like, you know, specific sports that I love. And, like, they just happen to be the sports you play.
Right.
And that's a really good fit. The truth is I would take that approach to any athlete I taught. Right, it's like the thing that I learned in the collegiate setting is, you know, you're gonna have 6 or 7 different teams. Like, if you're like the assistant coach, you know, like the head coach gets football or basketball or whatever the big sport, you get stuck with everything else.
Yeah.
So guess what? You know, your first year of being a collegiate strength and conditioning coach, you're gonna have to learn everything you can about volleyball and field hockey and cross country and shit that you thought you never cared about.
So you look at all these sports and you say, what do they need?
Yeah,
so
what are the common injuries, right?
Okay.
Like, what are, you know, like, and you can find that information, you know? It's like, what do I know about lacrosse? Well, nothing, but I can find out pretty quick, you know, that guys break their ankles and their wrists, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a contact sport, but they're not football size, right?
Yeah.
So they're not, like we talked about, you know, being a little bit bigger, having some meat on your bones really helps you not get broken, you know? So what can I do to help somebody like that? You know, what do they do on the field? And anybody who's going to take the time to work with you, who's like a serious professional, is going to hopefully do that research. They're going to find like what is, you know, unique about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. The tough part is it's not like I can crack open the NSCA, you know, like strength and conditioning book and read, this is what happens to BJJ guys, because it's not a collegiate sport, you know, it's not an Olympic sport. And so it's going to, you know, it's a niche market.
Yeah.
And I think that's where, you know, you have the opportunity for really awesome relationships with coaches who really care about it.
Yeah.
And you have, you know, the opportunity for kind of manipulation where you have, you know, a group of athletes who are in desperate need of information but don't know, like, where to go. And the worst part is like, in the fitness industry in general, this is really true, but even in strength and conditioning, there's arguments. Perfectly good guys that are, like, both respectable are going to disagree on, like, what the best thing is,
right?
You know, and it's like, how do you choose? If me and like all my degrees and certifications and experience, whatever, and I say this is the right way to do something, and then some other dude who's also, you know, coached a bunch of other successful athletes and has a bunch of other credentials, say he's like, no, you gotta do it this way, we're both getting good results, like, what do you do? Like, how do you choose?
Yeah, maybe doesn't matter with the results, you know.
honestly I would so much rather have somebody train with a coach who doesn't have their head up their ass and just takes a little minute or two to try, than not train with anyone. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost guaranteedly, just like, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu schools vary a lot, but I would much rather have anybody go to just about any Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu school than go to the Taekwondo McDojo down the street. You know what I mean? It's like
good odds are that jiu-jitsu is better.
Yeah. Well, Jason, this has been a good podcast. We're going to set our record for the longest one, and we haven't even scratched the surface of some of my questions. So we'd love to have you back, man.
You should give them a preview. What are the questions?
I don't know. I got all the ones there today. Okay. I'd love to have you back sometime.
Oh, that would be a blast.
Yeah, so thank you for your time.
Let's go and plug.
Yeah. Where can folks find out more about you? Where's your gym, and where can they find out about that?
Contact number would be great.
Also. All right. So, Jason Strutt.
Yeah.
Head coach of CrossFit Full Circle. We're currently located in Mechanicsville, at 8161 Mechanicsville Turnpike. We'll actually be moving into a space about five times the size of that in a couple of weeks. Hopefully, our guaranteed open up date is no later than June 1st. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get it cracked open like by May 15th. We'll be down a lot closer to the city at that point on Summit Avenue in Scott's Addition. It is going to be a sexy-ass gym.
Awesome.
Man, it's going to look really cool. But it's going to be a lot bigger, and we have a lot more space. And the way that we run our gym, we have, like, small classes, and coaching is why I'm a coach, you know? And it's like, and it's been a problem to have a small gym and have small classes, and, you know, it can only get so big, you know? It's like, I mean, we have a demand now where, you know, we have more people than we can handle, so we need more coaches going at the same time. We need more space. And so this move up is going to be really great. You can check us out at CrossFitFullCircle.com. I think if somebody's into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and they're interested in strength conditioning, they're probably going to like my personal blog a lot more. So I have a personal blog called River City Physical Culture, I think. So if you Google River City Physical Culture, you'll find it. But if you do like RiverCityPC.blogspot.com or something. I think that's the exact.
We can put it on our blog when we post this.
I apologize in advance, guys. This is just like rambling rants and whatnot.
No, it's good.
But if you like strength and conditioning for grappling, there's I don't know 4 or 5 years of stuff in there. Before I became a business owner and grad student, I used to post on there a lot more. Now it's kind of hit or miss. The last year, I've tried to shift the focus over to motor learning. And how, motor learning, coaching, that type of issues, like, when it comes to everything that I do. But really, like, it's usually about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and CrossFit.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, a lot of it's about my coaching. So it's, like, on my side of things. Like, how do I handle, you know, athletes who are a pain in the ass? Or stuff about BJJ. Like, there should be some links to some cool blogs and stuff. Like, there's guys that are real smart. Provost? I don't know how you pronounce it. He's one of a...
He's a straight blast gym.
And he writes about, you know, like, principles of motor learning and stuff like that.
We've got a good blog.
I love it, man. I love it. It kills me. Like, one of the hardest things I think that has really always kind of made me really passionate about strength and conditioning, but motor learning, is the fact that, like, jiu-jitsu is hard to learn.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's marketed as simple, but it takes
so much time and so much effort. And, you know, who your teacher is really makes a big difference. And, like, how you learn and how you practice makes a big difference. And, frankly, people get in charge of teaching Brazilian jiu-jitsu not because they're good teachers, but because they can beat people up, you know?
Right.
And so it's like, and that's not just BJJ. That's every martial art. And, you know, there's some martial arts schools that are run really good, and their students, you know, consistently improve. And there's schools that are just a mess. You know, and it's frustrating when you're not the technical expert, but you watch people make, like, coaching and teaching errors.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of stuff about, you know, just trying to learn, whether it's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, whether it's CrossFit or whatever. So it should be interesting. If you like this podcast, you'll probably like that.
We'll get you back again.
Definitely have you back.
One thing we always do before, well, we're trying to do this, their third podcast, is we talk about as jiu-jitsu geeks, what makes us geeky is our obsession for the products and lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So we talk about what we're looking forward to coming up.
So you go first. What have you been looking at?
Though the video of him and Marcelo Garcia wasn't all that the most flattering.
Yeah.
Eddie Bravo's got a new video coming out. I don't think I've talked about it. I mean, I said this last one. I don't know. But it's, I think it's Advanced Rubber Guard is the name of the DVD set.
Something, yeah.
It looks as good and as well produced as the new Kaio DVD set.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I've just seen the commercials of them both. And Eddie is the kind of dude that I just love watching his stuff because it's funny.
Yeah.
I can't take a lot and put it in my jiu-jitsu game. Yeah. And I've tried for years, but I can't. But it's just entertaining and cool to watch.
I have to say, I spent like at least an hour after watching that Marcello video going back and watching Joe Rogan and Eddie Bravo videos. Yeah.
Just because they're funny, man.
Yeah,
it's funny.
Yeah, having such a good time.
That's what I'm looking for. I don't know when that's coming up. I know it's coming out soon. But Aaron?
Yeah, and real quick before I get this, you start two things. Restart this podcast because we have two interests, jiu-jitsu and podcasts, among other things. And one of the ones that we kind of modeled or the feel of the podcast there was Joe Rogan, because we like how he just has that conversational let it go where it goes. So we were big fans of that one too. It's just it's funny. One thing I'm looking forward to, and I can't remember what I've talked about either, but definitely Kaio's new DB. It's coming out. I think I may have said that last time. Just a reminder about that one. But also, and the name escaped me, but speaking of Victory Belt, speaking of CrossFit, there's a book that Victory Belt's coming out with that talks about, it's more of a journey of a lady who gets into the CrossFit games, and a book about that. So that's going to come out with Victory Belt. They haven't set a date yet.
Interesting.
Knowing Victory Belt's timeline, we'll see it in the next 5 years.
You know the name of it?
I don't know if there's been a title yet or if it's just the concept that they've thrown. But check out Victory Belt, and they have a button for their blog, and they have a listing of it on there. So, it'll be a good story. So, again, Jason, thanks a lot, man. Definitely have you back. Great information. And the takeaway maybe is to, guys, go find yourself a good strength coach and spend a little bit of time with him or her.
Strength is the basal biomotor ability for all other abilities.
Can I put that quote on our blog?
Yes.
Can I credit you, or is it somebody else?
You know what? Somebody else said it before I did. I just don't remember who.
We won't credit them.
We won't credit them. You just said it on the podcast, so there you go.
Boom. We'll leave it there. Thanks, Jason. Thanks, guys. Jason. See you next time.
Bye.